The fifth parak starts off with Mishnah Aleph discussing the importance of when we know the cutoff for fruit. Is it Kedusha Shvi'is or is it not Kedusha Shvi'is? And the default is when a fruit reaches the stage of Chanata, which means that the petals of the flower, the blossom, have fallen off. That is considered Kedusha Shvi'is. So when that happens in the Shemitah year, you have an apple, you have an orange, whatever it may be, and you have that blossom, that flower that comes out, and it proceeds the stage of, there's a little bit development of the fruit, but we see it by when those petals fall, that has Kedusha Shvi'is, and the fruit that ripens, even if it ripens after the Shemitah year, that is still going to have the Kedusha of Shvi'is. Now we're going to see an example, maybe a second example as a machlokes, of something that takes longer to ripen. So Benosh Shuach, we're talking about a certain type of strange white fig that took 3 years in order to ripen. So it would have its time that it started, but it would only become ripe 3 years later. So when is that considered part of Shemitah and when is it not? So the Mishnah says, Shvi'is shelen shnia, the Shvi'is, what is considered Kedusha Shvi'is is when it ripens in the second year of the Shemitah cycle. Shehen oso shalosh shani, because it takes 3 years for these benosh shuach, this type of white fig, in order to ripen. So what's going on here is it's saying that when we see in the second year after the Shemitah year, so in the second year of the cycle, when those benot shuach, white figs, are ripened on the tree, we know that they are Kedusha Shvi'is because they blossomed during the Shemitah year, and it simply takes 3 years for them in order to ripen. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the same thing, almost the same thing applies to Har Parsos. This is also a certain type of fig or date. It's a machlokis in the Mefortion what it is. Shvi'is shalem motzei shvi'is. Their shvi'is is then the year after the Shemitah year, so it's in the first year of the new cycle. Shehen osos l'shteishani, because it takes them 2 years to ripen. So anything that ripens in the year after the Shemitah year, we know that's their second year that they were on the tree, and accordingly it dates back to the Shemitah year. So when they ripen in the second year, which is the first year of the new Shemitah cycle, that is when we know they have Kedusha Shvi'is. Amru lo, however, Chachamim respond back to Rabbi Yehuda, lo amru ela benosh shuach. The only exception to the rule that we have is the benosh shuach, that is, those are the white figs, but we would disagree with you when it comes to the parsos. That would go based on the default rule. It goes by the chanata, when the petals fall out, and we're not going to look into when it ripens at future years after the Shemitah cycle. Mishnah Beis, and thereafter for another three Mishnayos, we're going to talk about a certain type of onion called the loof. And as recorded in our Mishnah and elsewhere Mishnayos as well, the way they used to store the loof was underground. And the concern with that is if we are doing that during the Shemitah year, it looks like we are planting the loof. Planting is not acceptable. That's a violation of the halachas of Shemitah. But storing underground would be acceptable. So our Mishnah is going to teach us the preferred or required, actually, method, how one should store the loof during the Shemitah year so it does not give off the appearance of planting, but of storing the loof underground. Hatom en es aluf b'shvi'is. So somebody is going and he's burying the loof, this type of onion, during the Shemitah year. Rabbi Meir Omer, that there are three requirements to make sure it doesn't look like somebody is planting. So you cannot plant one loof here. You can't, bury for storage one here and one there, because that looks like planting. But lo yifchos misa'asayim, when you do it, when you're storing it underground, you have to do a minimum of 2 se'ah, which is 12 kav. And condition number 2, ad gova shlosha tfachim, and it has to stick out 3 tfachim from the ground. And in addition, v'tefach afar al gabav, that's the third requirement, is that you have a minimum of a tefach of dirt on top of it, so it's clear that you are putting it down for storage and protection, because if it's for growth, you don't need a tefach on top of it. Bechachamim omrim, chachamim disagree with the first two conditions. Lo yivchos me'arbaz kavim, they don't require, when you are storing it underground, that you have 12 kav. You only need 4 kav together. That's enough to not look like you're planting these separate onions. agova tefach, and it should stick out of the ground. One tefach, you don't need three tefachim sticking out. And they agree with the third of the conditions, v'tefach afar al gabav, you have need a minimum of a tefach of dirt on top of it to make it clear that it is for storage, not for growth. And in addition, the Mishnah says, v'tomno, the location of where you can store it, where you have to store it, bimkom drisas adam, you have to put it in a place that people are trampling over it. And the effect of that is, if people are walking regularly in that area, that won't enable the luft to grow, and accordingly that takes away also the Maris Ayin problem. People are going to see that you're doing it where people walk. They're going to understand you're not storing it, the belief there, beneath there for it to grow, that you're simply storing it to store it. Mishnah Gimel continues talking about the luf, and we have an interesting scenario. The luf, as it would grow, the leaves would grow up, and that was the part that was edible. And what would happen is if the leaves grew during the Shemitah year, so it has Kedusha Shviz, and also thereafter in the eighth year it continued growing. So part of the leaf has Kedusha Shviz, and part of the leaf, which grew in the eighth year, which is the non-Shemitah year, the first year of the new cycle, does not have Kedusha Shviz. So that's going to be the complication in our Mishnah. And just give some important background to our Mishnah. There's a halacha that when Shemitah produce is taken inside somebody's house, you're allowed to take some based on your normal needs. You're not allowed to hoard it. It has to be left outside for the people, others to take it, the anim to take it. So that's hefker produce, but you can take a little into your house for your own needs. There's a halacha that at a certain point, you have to take it out of your house. This is called the chiyuv abiyur, which means removal, like biur chametz, removing it from your house. And the concept is that at a point, that specific produce is no longer available in the fields, for example, for wild animals. It's not available outside. We have to take it out of our houses. And what we do is, in order to do the beer, we take it out into the field, and we have to take it out, and we make it hefker. And what we do is make it hefker, that's beer from our houses, and then there's an important machlokis in our Masechta later on in the Masechta. Who gets that hefker produce? Does the owner who brought it out, can he take it back? Or does it have to be given only over to the anim? So that's an important machlokas that we have, and we will see in our Mishnah as well, that is going to be part of the machlokas. So the Mishnah says as follows, luf sha'avra alav shviyas. So if we have this luf that went through shviyas, it grew in the shviyas year, and now it's continued growing in the eighth year, the first year of the new cycle. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer is the view. Im laktu ha'anim es alav. If during the Shemitah year, the poor people came in and they took their part, they took the leaves from the luf plant. So what that means is they took it in the Shemitah year. So coming into the eighth year, there's nothing left with Kedusha Shviz on that luf plant. Anything new would be not have Kedusha Shviyas. So let's assume that they indeed came in during the Shviyas year. Lakatu, they have already gotten their portion. So when it comes to the eighth year, and we see a luf plant, but if they took during the Shemitah year, they have nothing of this plant because everything grew after they took their chelek, their part that they had coming to them during the Shemitah year. Vim lav, however, if they did not come in during the Shemitah year, so now we're in the eighth year and we have a luf plant, and it has growth combined, both from the seventh year, the Shemitah year that has Kedusha Shviz, and the eighth year that does not have Kedusha Shviz. Accordingly, Yaseh Cheshbon Imanim, the owner of that plant, when he takes the luf plant, when he cuts down the leaves, he's going to have to make an accounting and a computation. He's going to have to allocate part of it. It's going to go to the anim, because that is Kedusha Shviz, and part of it is going to go to him. Now, this is in accordance with the view that once you do biur, once after the produce is no longer available, you have to take it out of your house and you do biur, this is in accordance with the view that anything that you make hefker, taking out of your house, that goes to the anim, they own it. And accordingly, we see here that even though it's during the eighth year, those anim still have a right to what was grown in the Shemitah year, and an accounting is done, and they have to get paid for their portion that grew during the Shemitah year. Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. He's of the view that once you do biur, the owner can take back the produce that he added. Own doesn't have to go to the anim. So he goes, says as follows, im laktu ha'anim es alav lakatu. Same thing as we saw before. If during the Shemitah year, the anim took their portion of the Kedusha Shviz, they've taken their due. That he agrees with. However, Vimlav, if they did not take their portion during the Shemitah year, so now that we're in the eighth year, the first year of the new cycle, we have Luth produce, and part of it has Kedusha Shvis, which grew in the seventh, and part of it does not, because part grew in the eighth. When you do beer on this, the owner's allowed to take back what he's doing beer on. Accordingly, with this combined plant, Ein la'anim alav cheshbon, the anim have no claims against him. If it's only in the eighth year already and they didn't take in the seventh year, the owner can keep it all and he doesn't have to account for anything back to the anim. Mishnah Dalet continues talking about the luf. That's a certain type of onion, but we have an interesting situation. It's not only about the luf. We're going to have other examples that fit into our situation. That our default is when we have a vegetable, it has going to be considered part of the Shemitah crop if it's kicked during the Shemitah year. That is our default when it comes to vegetables. An exception to the rule is if the full growth of that vegetable was in the sixth year. So when Shemitah starts, it's fully grown. So we would simply be kicking it in the Shemitah year, but no growth in the Shemitah year. In that situation, that is produce of the sixth year, not the Shemitah year. So our situation is that's what we have with the luf shel erev shvis. We have the luf. It grew fully during the sixth year and is now shenichnas l'shvis, and it has gone in. It's still attached to the ground, and now it's the Shemitah year. That's example number one. Then the same thing, example number two, v'chein bitzalim haketzonim. If we have bitzalim, which are onions that grew in the summer, they fully grew in the sixth year, but they're still attached when Shemitah starts. And number three, v'chein pua shel idis. Pua is a type of plant that they would use the roots to make red dye. And it's growing in idis, which is high quality land. So we have three examples of vegetables or plants that indeed we would want to uproot it. And in particular, the bulb, which is part of the root system underneath, is edible. So we really want to not just take off some vegetables from it. Well, we want the entire plant, including the root system. So how are we going to do that without causing an appearance of marasayin that it looks like we are working the field? So Beis Shammai Omim, Beis Shammai requires us to do it in a shinoi, in a different way than we would do it during the non-Shemitah year. So Okrin Osam, you're permitted to uproot it, including the roots, including the bulb under the ground, but Ma'arufos Shel Eitz, with a spade of wood, as long as we're not using a tool of metal, a spade made of metal, but of wood. That's enough of an announcement to the world that we are not indeed working the ground, but we are simply removing these plants that were completed and do not have Kedusha Shvis. So Beis Hillel Omri, Beis Hillel, as is typical, is more lenient. Bekardumo shel matachos, you can even remove it with a pickaxe of metal. Beis Hillel was not concerned about the marasayin. Nonetheless, what's interesting is Umodim bepua shel tzlaos. Even Beis Shammai is lenient, and Umodi means Beis Shammai agrees with Beis Hillel. When it comes to that pua plant again is the plant that from the roots we create a red dye, but it's not growing in soil here, but it's on tzlaos. So the Bartunur explains two possibilities. Tzlaos is either like red with a samech, which is tzlaos, samech lamed instead of tzadi. And that, what it's talking about, it's growing on top of stone, like big boulders. So that's not the typical way to plant this plant or any plants. And accordingly, if somebody's removing it, it doesn't give off the appearance that you're working the ground. Or he says tzlaot is from the word of the side, tzidea sadeh. It's growing on the side of the sadeh, not the normal place that you would plant. Accordingly, in either of those situations, that's one of two explanations of what tzlaot is. If we have that pua plant that is growing either on top of stone or on the side of the field, sha'okrin oseb kardumo shel matachos, even Beis Shammai would agree that indeed you can uproot it even with a pickaxe of mataches, a metal. You don't have to use a wood kli, a wood contraption, because that is enough of a shinoi. It's growing on wood. It's on the side of the field that we're not going to give off the appearance that indeed we are working the land during the Shemitah year. Mishnah Hay discusses the luf. Once again, this is our last luf Mishnah of this series, and it discusses something very interesting. After the Shemitah year has ended, there is a concern that if somebody buys produce from somebody who is an Am Haaretz, an uneducated person, indeed that person may be selling produce from the Shemitah year. So the default is indeed it's not permitted to purchase after the Shemitah year from an Ama Aretz until the new produce, the produce that you want to buy, is readily available from the year after Shemitah. So from the eighth year or the first year of the new cycle. And once that produce is readily available in the market, then you can buy from an Ama Aretz because you don't have to be concerned. It came from the Shemitah produce. But indeed, it's from the new produce that grew in the year after the Shemitah year. So what we grapple with in our Mishnah is, do we treat the luf the same way? Because as we've seen, the luf, this type of onion, can stay in the field for multiple years. So the concern here is if we're buying it the year after Shemitah, right after Shemitah, soon after Shemitah, maybe indeed it's not from the that year, maybe it's from the sixth year, maybe it's from the seventh year. We don't really know when it's from. So the Mishnah says, Me'imasai mutar adam likach luf b'motzei shvi'is. When, after the shvi'is has ended, are we permitted to start buying luf from somebody who is uneducated and we're concerned he's not sticking with the Shemitah halachas? Maybe indeed he's selling Shemitah produce. So Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned. Rabbi Yehuda omer miyad, immediately, on Motzei Shvi'is, right after the Shemitah year ends, it's permitted to buy luf from somebody who is an Amaretz, because we assume that that is from the sixth year produce, which does not have the Kedusha Shvi'is. We don't have to be concerned that it is from the Shemitah year at all. And for Chachamim Omrim, if Chachamim disagree, you cannot buy right after the Shemitah year. We have to be concerned that indeed that luf may have been grown during the Shemitah year, maybe it has Kedusha Shvi'is, so you have to wait in order to buy luf in the eighth year, which is the first year after the Shemitah cycle, first year of the new cycle. You have to wait like any other type of vegetable, other types of produce, Mishiyir Behechadash, when the new crop is in the markets and is readily available in the shuk. That is when we can assume this luf, just like any other of those other items, that is when we can assume that it is from the new crop of the eighth year, and it doesn't have Kedusha Shvi'is. But up until then, if you have an Amar selling luf, you have to assume that it has the Kedusha Shvi'is, and you cannot buy it from them. Mishnah Vav is a very important Mishnah talking about what items can be sold to somebody during the Shemitah year if they are items that are used in farming. And do we need to be concerned that if we're selling them to an Ama Aretz, if somebody who we're concerned he's not going to keep the Shemitah years, he's uneducated, are we permitted to sell him farming equipment, for example, because we may be concerned if it's in the land of Israel, he's going to be using it in prohibited ways, in violation of the halachas of Shemitah. And then the person selling it would be violating the prohibition of lifnei iver lo sita mirshol, literally putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person. But it also applies, and it could be an iser d'oraisa, in fact, depending on the situations, a d'oraisa d'rabbanan, aiding and abetting somebody to commit a sin, and that would be selling him farm tools that would be used during the Shemitah year in violation of the halachas of Shemitah. So the Mishnah says, Elu kelim she'ein ha'uman rashai lemochram b'shvi'is. These are indeed the tools that a uman who's a craftsman, somebody who sells these type of kelim, is not permitted to sell them to a farmer, somebody who may use them during the Shemitah year. And the listing is as follows: Macharesha, it's a plow, the chol keleh, and everything that's used in conjunction with the plow. Ha'ol, which is a yoke. The yoke is used to attach the animal to the plow. V'hamizra, which is a fork used to winnow the produce. V'hadeker, and a hoe. All of these are used exclusively for commercial agricultural needs. And accordingly, the only, or almost the only possible use that they could have during the Shemitah year would be to violate the prohibitions of Shemitah. Val mocher hu, but it would be permitted to sell smaller tools that indeed may have a dual use, uses that are prohibited during Shemitah, but also that are permitted on Shemitah. Val mocher hu magal yad, which is a hand sickle, magal katsir, a reaping sickle, va'agala, the whole kelea, nagala is like a wagon, and all the kelim, all the appliances that are used in association with the wagon, that would be permitted. And as we're about to see, we'll conclude this Mishnah with a general principle. If you sell something to somebody that would indeed, that could use it for a permitted use, and in here we're talking about during the Shemitah, it's not totally prohibited to eat the produce, to take the produce off the plants, even to use a sickle, and even to use a wagon to take it to your house, as long as you do it in small quantities for the needs of your family. You're not allowed to do it on a commercial basis or store too much of it. You have to leave it for other people in the field, but to use a hand sickle or a reaping sickle to cut off some for your personal use and to carry it back with the wagon, that indeed would be permitted. So selling these type of tools to somebody who could use it for a prohibited use in the Shemitah year, but could use it for a permitted use, that indeed would be permitted. And here's the general principle, Zaklal, this is the general rule. Kol shemalachto miuchedes lavera, any item, any tool that is designated specifically for a prohibition. In other words, it's going to be used. We know it's going to be used because that's its sole or close to sole purpose is to be used in violation of the Shemitah laws. Also, it's not permitted to sell it to somebody who we have concern. He's going to violate the Shemitah laws. However, le'isra le'heter, a kli, a tool that can be used both for prohibited and permitted uses, then it's mutter, then it's permitted to sell to somebody, even if he's not of the frumest ilk, he's an Am Haaretz, he's uneducated, but there we can assume that he's not going to violate the halachas of Shemitah with the kli that we sell to him during the Shemitah year. Mishnah Zayin talks about another aspect of not being involved in leaf ne'iver, selling items to an Am Haaretz who could use them, in fact, to violate the halachas of Shemitah. So when it comes to the halachas of Shemitah, we mentioned that when somebody goes into a hefker field, you can't take everything, for example, to store it and sell it. You just take what your needs are, limitations on what you can do. So we're concerned if we have an Am Haaretz and we sell him certain type of kalim, certain type of vessels that he's going to be using for what he takes in the fields. For example, if he goes and he takes olives, we're concerned about his taking too much, and then if we sell him too many vessels that he can put olive oil in, or if he goes into a field and takes grapes, and we sell him these vats to put the wine in, if we sell him too many, we're concerned he's taking too much produce from the fields of others during the Shemitah year. So we put limitations on it. Hayotzer a potter, mocher chamesh kadeh shemin, is permitted to sell to an Am Haaretz. We're concerned he may violate the halachas of Shemitah. Up to 5 empty jugs that will hold his oil, the chamesh etzre kadeh yayin, and up to 15, it's a different type of jugs to hold his wine after he takes the olives and the grapes and squeezes them. Shechein darko lahavi min hefker, because this is the amount that somebody would typically bring home from hefker. So those are reasonable amounts, and you can sell those amount of kalim. But more than that, we're concerned we're facilitating that Am Haaretz taking more Shemitah produce, indeed, than he should. However, if the Am Haaretz already went picking in the fields and brought back and he has more, we don't have to be concerned that he did it in a way of violating the halachas of Shemitah. In that situation, it would be permitted to sell him in excess of the aforestated quantities at the beginning of our Mishnah. And in addition, other times we're not concerned about this. It would be permitted to sell more than these quantities to non-Jews in the land of Israel. We are not concerned that those non-Jews will sell those kalim, those jugs, jars, etc., to a Jew who will then go violate the halachas of Shemitah. We don't have to be concerned about that. And also, it's permitted to sell uli Yisrael b'chutz al haaretz, to a Jew who is out of the land of Israel, where they don't have the halachas of Shemitah. And what that means is we're not concerned that we're going to have a Jew buying it in chutz la'aretz and bringing it to the land of Israel and then violating the halachas of Shemitah. We don't have to have that distant concern. That would not fall under the category of the seller violating leaf ne'iver lo siten mirshol by aiding and abetting somebody violating the halachas of Shemitah. That much we do not have to be concerned about. Mishnah Ches continues the concept of what can and cannot be lent sold, etc., to an Ama Aretz, which we're defining on someone who is not strict about the halachas of Shemitah. So the general concept here is if there's a possibility that that Ama Aretz that we're going to lend or sell that item to will use it for a non-prohibited purpose, it's permitted. But if really there's no possibility that they'll use it for a permitted purpose, we know they're going to use it to violate the laws of Shemitah, then it would be prohibited because that is a misayeya. That is assisting them, aiding and abetting them in violating the halachas of Shemitah. So Mishnah Ches says as follows, Beis Shammai Omrim. Beis Shammai is of the view, Lo yim kor lo para choreshes b'shvi'is, is not permitted to sell to an Ama Aretz a cow that has been trained to plow. That's what it does. It's a plowing cow during the Shemitah year. Don't sell it to them because we know they're going to plow their field during the Shemitah year. Beis Hillel matirim. Beis Hillel says there is a basis to be lenient to lend it to them. Why? Because there is, albeit a distant possibility, there's still a possibility, it could be that they are going to shecht that animal. So this is the concept here that Bartanura explains, even if we have a small possibility that they would use it for a permitted reason, it is permitted, when there's a chance that we can say we have a possible, albeit distant possibility, to be somech, to hang it, it's called tolin, on that distant possibility, but it's a permitted possibility, then we would be permitted to sell it to them. But Beis Shammai here is of the view that there's no possibility that they are going to take a cow that has been trained to plow, which is an expensive cow, and use it to shecht it. That's just not going to happen. Accordingly, Beis Shammai is the view that it is prohibited to sell them that trained plowing cow. Continuing, mocher lo peiros, it is permitted to sell during the Shemitah year fruits, for example, sell them an apple, afilu bishas hazeri, even at the time that they are planting the fields. And here the concept is the major concern, he's going to take the seeds from the fruit and plant it in his field during the Shemitah, obviously prohibited. We would be aiding and abetting that violation of the Shemitah laws. However, we are tole, we can assume that he may eat it, and because there's that possibility, albeit distant, but there's a possibility he may take that fruit and use it in a permitted way, we are permitted to sell it to him. Continuing, Masha, we can lend him lo sa'aso. A sa'aso is like a measuring cup, a large measuring cup, to measure a sa'a, which is between, depending on the shita, a little bit more than 8 and up to a little bit more than 14 liters. So it's quite large, a large measuring cup. We can lend it to him, even though we know this Ama Aretz that is not strict about the halachas of Shemitah, even though we know he has a threshing floor and he may be threshing during the Shemitah year, Shemitah produce, and using our kli for that, nonetheless, it's possible he would use it in a permitted way as well, not on his threshing floor, so we can indeed, we can lend it to him as well. And continuing, uporet lomaos, and we are permitted to break a dollar from, we're allowed to give him change. For example, he has $100 bills and he needs tens or whatever it may be. Uporet lomaos, afal pishu yodea sheyesh lo poalim, even though I know he has workers and he's having them work during the Shemitah year, and he may use the change that I give him to pay his workers, and he's violating the Shemitah laws when he has workers, and he's paying them with the money that I give him change for, indeed, because he may use that change in a permitted way, this too is permitted. However, v'chulan, in all of these situations, beferush, if he tells us the reason that he wants the item, for example, he tells us that he wants the change to pay his workers, or he tells us that he wants that para, he wants that cow in order to harvest his field, or he tells us he wants that measuring cup, that huge measuring cup, in order to use for his goren, his threshing floor. We know he's going to use it for a prohibition then, because he told us that, the kulan beferush, in those situations, asurin, it would be prohibited to sell or lend him the items, because then indeed, we would be aiding and abetting the violations of the Shemitah halachas. Mishnah test continues our interactions permitted and not permitted with those who may take the items or the assistance that we lend them and do prohibited acts with them. So the Mishnah says as follows, Mashelas, we can lend an Isha. A woman is permitted to lend lechaverta to her friend, another woman, hachashud ala shviz, who indeed we are suspicious that she does not keep the halachas of Shemitah, various items, nafa, a sifter, ukvara, a sieve, a rechaim, and a millstone, v'tanur, and an oven, because it's possible that, again, the same concept that there's a prior Mishnah, she may use it for permitted uses. So as long as we can be tola, as long as we have a basis to say she could use it in a permitted way, we can lend her these items, even though it's more likely that she would use it in a prohibited way. Aval, however, lo savor, v'lo titchan ima, it's not permitted to sort the Shemitah produce with her, it's not permitted to grind the Shemitah produce with her, to actively assist her, that's where we draw the line. So lending her items, okay. But assisting her in dealing with the Shemitah produce, not okay. Continuing, now we're not going to talk about the Shemitah halachas, we're going to talk about an Eishes Chaver. This is the wife of somebody. A Chaver is somebody who's strict about Tuma and Tahara, and it also refers to somebody who's strict about taking off Maisra. So we're not talking about Shemitah, we're talking about a related concept. Can this lady who's strict about Tuma and Tahara and Maisra, is she permitted to give physical items and physical assistance, items and assistance to a woman who is not strict about Tumantara, not strict about taking off Maestra? So the Mishnah says similarly, Eishes Chaver, Mashela, she is permitted to lend Le'eishes Amarz to a wife of an Amarz who's not strict about Tumantara, not strict about taking off Maestra. We're concerned she is not strict and will violate those halachas. But nonetheless, it's permitted to lend to her Nafa, Ukvara, those are the sifter and the sieve. Ubereres, here it's a little bit different. She's even permitted to physically assist her up to a point. Ubereres, she can sort with her. Vitochene, she can grind with her, her produce. Umarketes, she can sift with her ima together, her produce, because here there's not a violation yet. However, Aval, Mishetati Lamayim, when the wife of the Ama Aretz, who's not strict about Tumantara, not strict about Maisras, when she puts the water into her flour, so now that she's making a dough which is going to include challah, at this point, the wife of the Chaver, who is strict about Trumas and Maisras, and he's strict about Tumantara, Lusigatzla, she's not allowed to touch anymore. Literally, she's not allowed to touch, but she cannot help anymore. Why? She'ein machzikim yedei ovri avera, because she is not actively permitted to help those who are doing an avera. The avera here is that when the water is put together with the flour to make a dough, this is when the obligation to take challah off happens. And that we are concerned, because this woman who is making the challah, the wife of the Ama Aretz, is not strict about Tuma and Tahara, not strict about Maestros. We are concerned here that she is Tameya and her Kalim that she's making the dough in are Tameyim. And as soon as she pours that water, there's an obligation to take challah, but that dough is going to become Tameh. And in other words, she is making challah into something that is impure, that is tamek, because she's impure, her kleilim are impure, and if the wife of the chaver is helping her, she is actively assisting in that prohibition. So she needs to stop assisting before it gets to this point. And continuing, v'chulan lo amru ela mibnei darkei shalom, all of these that we said in our Mishnah that are permitted to lend the vessels, and to, at least when it came to the Eishes Chaver, talking about Tumatar Masos, to help her with the sorting and grinding and so, etc., all those activities that are permitted, the Mishnah comes and explains us that ideally it wouldn't be permitted, because we are giving indirect assistance, not active direct assistance, but indirect assistance to what is likely a prohibition. But nonetheless, Chazal permitted it because of Darkei Shalom, so that we should have peace between those who are stricter about halachas and those who are less strict. Even though it's unfortunate that people are less strict about halacha, but we have to make sure to get along and have peace with them. Accordingly, Chazal permitted it when it was indirect. However, direct assistance with a prohibition, that is when we cannot be involved anymore. And continuing, Umachzikim Yadei Ovdei Kochavi Meshvius, this is something that we had in a prior Mishnah, but nonetheless, because it's the same theme, the Mishnah tells us that it's permitted to give encouragement to Ovdei Kochavim, to non-Jews during the Shemitah year who are working the land in the land of Israel, because they are not violating the halachas of Shemitah. They are not prohibited to work the land. And accordingly, we can give them a yasher koach, we can give them atzlacha, we can give them encouragement to have success in their planting and their harvesting. Avolo yedei Yisrael. But it's not permitted to give encouragement to a Jew working the land during the Shemitah year, because that is a prohibition. So obviously, we can't encourage them in their work. V'sholim b'shloma b'tnei darkei sholem. In addition, we can ask people who are non-Jewers, who are idolaters, over the Avodah Zarah, we can give them a Shalom Aleichem, even though Shalom is the name of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We can do it even on their pagan holidays, because we want to maintain good relations. It's literally for the sake of peace. We want to maintain good relations with the non-Jews. So Chazal were lenient in these areas.